I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from the trendy Sacred Beast Diner in the heart of Cincinnati, Ohio's historic and most charming Over the Rhine District. Come along and join me for a conversation with Max Doran, Vice President of Centrifuse, a transformative Cincinnati-based VC startup specialist. We'll then meet up with Jake Whitman, founder of Really Good Boxed Wine Incorporated. Whitman has reinvented boxed wine, propelling it to a new level of sophistication with superb California wines and cutting-edge packaging technology. And it was thanks to his friendship with Doran and Centrifuge that his company was funded and launched to reinvent and propel the boxed wine landscape.
My name is Max Doran. I'm a vice president at Centrifuge Capital, which is a venture firm that invests in Cincinnati-based companies. I lead our direct investment strategy and really sort of at the center of trying to help Cincinnati startups grow and thrive.
So that really wasn't your history, your background. You probably had no clue you would be doing what you're doing today.
I had no clue 5 years ago what venture capital was. I definitely had no idea that I would even live in Cincinnati. But we're at an incredible moment in the city where we have this venture fund that we are deploying capital out of that is a really sizable fund to make a huge impact on the startup ecosystem locally. And it's exciting.
So a lot of it is promoting the destination, the town itself, right? There's a reason why you're here and focused locally and regionally?
Yeah, so our fund is backed by some of the major corporations in town. So Procter & Gamble and Kroger, Western and Southern, they all got together about 12 years ago and said, you know, if Cincinnati's really going to thrive, we need to make sure we have a really thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem. They got together and they started both a nonprofit that helps support founders along their journey, but also started a venture capital fund to provide much needed capital to early stage startups to help them grow. And it's been about 10 years of making investments, mostly to date in other venture capital funds. Now we are taking a lot of the returns from that, which is both the relationships we built with venture capital funds all over the country, but also the returns we've gotten from those investments. And we're now turning around and making investments super proactively into local companies. You know, I think with our fund, we make it that much more likely that somebody who already lives here is going to make the leap into entrepreneurship. And or somebody might say, hey, you know what, there's a really exciting stuff happening in Cincinnati. There's this great pool of capital. This might be a place that I want to start my startup, especially with all the buy-in from big corporates who can be awesome customers.
So your existence can be a deal maker and your absence could be a deal breaker for a local startup, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're a deal breaker or a deal maker.
You make a difference.
We definitely make a difference. Mm. I think that, you know, we really are trying to help companies raise more money, raise it quicker, and raise from really great investors. Mm-hmm. We're not playing kingmaker. So we really are trying to bring really great investors into town to back our great startups. And then what we do is we very quickly can write a check, we can be local eyes and ears, we can help make a venture firm from outside the region more comfortable investing here, and then we can help open doors to talent pipelines, to customers, and to other venture capital funds as a company scales.
Are there criterion and different elements that would make somebody rise to the top of your awareness and your radar?
Yeah, you know, we're focused very early, and when you're investing in companies at the earliest stages, I would argue you're looking at really two critical factors. First and foremost, the founder or the founding team. Do we believe that this founder is great? You know, is he, she, are they the right person to go build this business? Do they have prior expertise or do they have a unique insight? So you're really backing great founders early. And then you want to see that they're building in a space or going after a problem that is really big. You know, venture capital is jet fuel. So it's for companies that are building, or it's rocket fuel. It's for companies that are building rocket ships. Mm-hmm. It's not for companies that are building a small mom and pop business. Those are critical for a city, but we're focused on great founders building really big companies.
Is there a social greater good consciousness to what you do.
Absolutely. That's what makes us perhaps different from traditional venture capital. So traditional venture capital is very much exclusively return seeking. Mm-hmm. We have a dual approach. We are both seeking a return because we have a responsibility to our investors and to future generations of founders to kind of grow this space of capital. But we also have an obligation to help grow the ecosystem, right? The Procter's and Gamble's and Kroger's and all the companies that are here, yes, they're in our fund for returns, but they also want to see us stimulate more companies, more growth, help more companies get on that path.
And again, it dovetails back to rising to the top would be somebody that's going to be based in town, in the county, in the region.
Yes, we exclusively invest in companies that have a presence here or plan to have a presence here.
Commitment.
Well, you know, we want to see the next Procter & Gamble, the next Kroger. It's going to start small, right? And it's going to take time. But the way that you really have a great return on a venture fund, but also the way that you have a really vibrant ecosystem is have one or two companies that really scale, that hire a lot of people. A lot of people have that experience of working at a high growth company, and then they recycle that experience both in their time and capital back into the next generation. So that's really what we're all playing for.
With the premise being local serving, local growing, would employment be an important ingredient in your criteria?
Look, we want to see companies, to the extent that they can, scale up their teams here. We can't require them to because we also want to make sure they build the kind of business they need to build.
That's going to be a positive in your analytics.
For sure. If we see a team that has, you know, the co-founders are here, maybe they're from here, they've shown they're building their teams here, that's going to be more exciting to us than somebody, you know, one founder or one employee here. It just, you're not going to see the impact on the city as you will with a core team growing here.
And again, how long have you been up and running?
Centreviews has been around for over a decade, both the nonprofit and the venture fund. On the venture fund side, this new strategy where we're focused, you know, on more direct investing as opposed to investing in other venture funds, that's only been around the last 6 to 8 months.
Okay. So in the last 6 to 8 months, do you have any winners, any successes, any things you're exceptionally proud of that you've already empowered?
Yeah, so we've made in the first, let's say, 6 months of actually cutting checks out of this new fund, we've made 13 investments into local companies. And one of the things we really think about is what does our capital lead to in terms of attracting outside capital? So we've invested, you know, close to $10 million in these 13 businesses, and we've attracted over $40 million in outside capital alongside us. Our sort of investment is getting other investors.
So it's a true stimulus.
Correct. Comfortable with making investments here when ordinarily it'd be hard to get somebody on a plane to come do it, but they know that there's a really credible investor here that they can partner with.
And your VC funders are mostly regional people?
Our investors are pretty much exclusively the major, you know, corporations and institutions in town. So Procter & Gamble, Kroger, Western and Southern, American Financial, Children's Hospital, UC. There's really a sense of pride that, you know, local employers have in the city. They want to see it thrive. It's good for business.
It's interesting because you think of corporate as being heartless and no human entity to it. But it's, you're implying a very much a greater good component of PG and whatnot.
Completely. I mean, part of how we can really build a startup ecosystem that is, you know, dynamic and differentiated is by providing access for startups to places like P&G and Fifth Third Bank and Western and Southern. Those are really tough customers to crack. But by being here, by being part of the ecosystem, we can't force any of these companies to work with a startup. Our corporations are very committed to opening the door and piloting and giving a puncher's chance to companies that might not otherwise have it.
That's so cool. Only because of time, we're going to have to push on to Jake.
Totally fine.
Before we sign off with you, to learn more about your world, you have a go-to website.
It's called Centrifuse, C-I-N-T-R-I-F-U-S-E, and you can go to centrifuse.com. And I'm Max Dworin, Vice President at Centrifuge Capital, which is the venture arm of Centrifuge.
Cool. And we're here with your friend Jake Whitman.
Yes, we're here with my friend Jake Whitman, who is both a personal friend, you know, that I have now known prior to even moving to Cincinnati, and such a friend that he was at my wedding and we served his wine at my wedding, but also a really dynamic presence in the city's startup ecosystem.
Thank you, Max, for that intro.
So, really good boxed wine?
That's exactly what it sounds like. You know, our vision is to make the highest quality boxed wine that exists in the United States. We're making vintage varietaled wine from premium regions up and down the west coast of the United States. And the box has all these incredible benefits. When you open it, it stays fresh for 6 weeks. It's an 86% carbon footprint reduction versus bottles, which a lot of people don't realize. And our packaging is about 90% lower, so we can sell the same beautiful wine for about half the price.
Shipping costs?
Shipping costs are lower.
Absence of glass.
That's right. It's half the weight. You don't need styrofoam to protect it, which is a big part of the environmental benefits. Honestly, unless you're going to store wine for over a year, which is only about 3% of the industry, the box beats bottles in virtually every way other than tradition. So, you know, a big part of what we're doing is overcoming the stigma of the box.
That's part of the reason why you started it, right?
Because
box wines sucked.
That's right. Yeah, the quick founding story is my wife and brother and I were sitting around drinking a bottle of rosé, and my wife and I would buy a box of wine every once in a while during COVID, and we're always really disappointed in the quality. And so the conversation came up, why isn't there really good boxed wine in the world? And that ultimately became the name that stuck, and here we are.
Why?
I think that there's a consumer perception around the cardboard box. It is not as elegant as a beautiful glass bottle pulling out a cork. I mean, it's not. It has a little bit more of a functional benefit, and there's a time and place for bottles. But it's really, you know, billions of dollars of marketing and tens of billions of dollars of sales have been happening over the last 30 years between Franzia and Bode Box and Black Box and the other litany of sort of mid to lower tier brands. And
how and why did you become a game changer? What did you change?
Honestly, we had a lot of debate about whether we would change the structure itself, but at the end of the day, the structure is actually a beautiful structure. So the big game changer for us was just producing the kinds of beautiful wine that you get if when you step into a tasting room in Napa.
So right? It's not the box, it's the ingredients.
Yeah, it's the ingredients inside. I had someone tell me once, you could drink great wine out of a Tupperware container with a straw, that's still great wine, right? So our big innovation was in the wine quality itself, and then producing a brand around it that kind of told that story of a new way of doing things in the wine industry.
There's a current issue with plastics and microplastics. Mm-hmm. How do you mitigate that?
It's a good question. We get this question a lot. Unfortunately, there is not a non-plastic option that reduces the carbon footprint as much as boxed wine. The California Sustainable Winemaking Alliance did a big study that showed boxed wine is far and away the most sustainable option for wine. But what I like to say is, because we have a single-use plastic inside the box, our job isn't done, and we're constantly watching the industry and watching kind of the innovation and R&D going into these different structures and packaging. And if a better option comes along, a biodegradable bag or something like that can keep the oxygen out, we would move to it in a heartbeat. We're using the best option that we have right now.
So again, the key variable is the liquid inside of the box.
You got it.
So tell us about that quest and how you source.
My chief operating officer has been in the industry for 25 years and has relationships all over the world. And so we leverage a lot of her relationships. We leverage our winemaker is based out in Healdsburg, so northern Sonoma County. And we partner one-on-one with amazing vineyards and producers up and down the coast. We don't go through bulk houses. We don't do big kind of corporate buys. Every one of our wines, we've launched 14 to date. Every one of them has come from a one-to-one relationship that we have with a beautiful producer or a vineyard.
Does the end consumer of your boxed wine know the provenance?
Absolutely.
And how is that marketed?
It's one of the differentiators. We are the only boxed wine in the market where every single wine has the vintage, so the year, the varietal laid out. Even if we have a red blend, we tell you the grape breakdown and the appellation where the wines came from. So we're not a California red. We are a Cabernet Sauvignon from 2019 and Paso Robles, right? Everything has those three elements on it to tell people the provenance of the wine inside.
Interesting. And price point, how does that work?
Most of them are $70 a box. Okay. Works out to $17.50 per bottle equivalent. There's four bottles worth of wine inside each. And our goal is to make wine that would sell for, call it $30 to $40 on shelf. Not that price is everything, but it's kind of an indicator of quality.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How do you rise above the crowd? How do you stand out? How do you exist in the mind of the consumer?
I think we help people understand these benefits. We do a lot to drive trial. We need to get people to try the wine. Our repeat purchase rates are incredibly high. And so you get, what we say is we can get people to try it, they love it, and they keep coming back for more.
Do you do any winemaker dinners for dog and pony show where you bring the box wine there.
Yeah, we've done winemaking dinners. We do tastings. We were at the Healdsburg Food and Wine Experience this past weekend pouring as part of that. So we do pourings. We do a lot of digital marketing. We're mostly a direct-to-consumer brand. Mm-hmm. So we ship to 45 states across the country. But, you know, a lot of this, I'm originally from Cincinnati, and I've looped the country a couple times. But I worked at Procter & Gamble for a while, and so I'm able to pull a lot of those, you know, a lot of the things that I learned as a brand director at P&G from my time here in Cincinnati into kind of building this business. And my wife and I moved back to Cincinnati because we wanted to, and it's a little odd that I own a wine brand and live in Cincinnati, but it's a credit to the Cincinnati kind of startup ecosystem.
This was incubated in your mind when you were in the Bay Area?
Yes, it was incubated out there. We were pre-COVID. Grace and I would go up to Sonoma and go up to Napa and taste these beautiful wines, and we really kind of fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And couldn't get the quality that we were looking for in a box, but we loved all the benefits during COVID. It was great. We had wine on tap that didn't go bad. We, you know, we could have a glass or two. We didn't have to drink five glasses of wine every time we went to drink a little wine. So this definitely incubated from my time spent mm-hmm. up in Napa and Sonoma from when I was living in San Francisco. And then, in fact, I moved back to Cincinnati just simply because Grace and I wanted to be here, mm-hmm. and 12 days later started the company. So it's a little odd to have started the business the second I moved back here, but it's a great place to build a company.
Interesting. Just curiosity, the physical process of sourcing and boxing, you're not bottling. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a real supply chain. It's a pretty niche supply
chain.
Give us
a word picture of how that works.
Yeah, so we source the wine. When we're sourcing grapes, we bring it to our winery, and our winemaker crushes and ferments the wine. And when it's ready to, or we buy close to finished wine in partnership with other producers, and our winemaker will finish it. So first it comes to our winery that we contract out of in Healdsburg. Our winemaker finishes the wine. We truck it down to southern Napa County and in American Canyon, where our co-packer is. They have specialized equipment that can fill the bags without letting oxygen in.
When the wine is transferred from Healdsburg, whatever, mm-hmm. it's juice?
It's finished wine. Okay. It's what's called kind of, for us, box-ready, bottle-ready wine, okay. right? So it's ready to go. It goes in a box within a day or two of arriving at the new location. So we finish 100% finish the wine at our winery.
Are you sourcing any from Lodi?
Yes. We've done two wines from Lodi. What? Our current Cabernet Franc Rosé that we just released is from a beautiful vineyard in Lodi. And last year's Grenache Rosé came from a different vineyard in Lodi. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And you said Paso.
We have Paso, we have a Napa Cab, we have San Luis Obispo Coast, beautiful Pinot Noir that we've done. We've done two Pinots from that region, and then some Sonoma and some Sonoma wines. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool. To learn more about your world.
Yeah, to learn more about us, you can go to reallygoodboxedwine.com and check us out there. You can check us out on Instagram. And this is Jake Whitman. I'm the founder and CEO of Really Good Boxed Wine.
That's so cool. Jake, thank you. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Now I got to go out and get my box.
There you go. I know. We ship to 45 states across the country, so there's a handful that we can't legally, but other than that, we ship all over the country.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cincinnati, Ohio, where we've been talking with Jake Whitman, founder and CEO of Really Good Boxed Wine.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.